Almonds, a Daredevil Fic. Written by Anonymous. Read by Dr. Fumbles McStupid. With the rating mature, the archive warning, creator chose not to use archive warnings. Relationships, Matt Murdock, Franklin Foggy Nelson. Matt Murdock and Franklin Foggy Nelson. Matt Murdock and Franklin Foggy Nelson and Karen Page. Additional tags. Point of view, Karen Page. Matt Murdock needs a hug. Jewish Foggy Nelson. Why isn't that a tag? Matt Murdock needs therapy. Karen Page knows Matt Murdock is Daredevil. Foggy Nelson knows Matt Murdock is Daredevil. Child abuse. Past child abuse. Past sexual abuse. Alcohol. Starvation. Child soldiers. Childhood trauma. These tags are bleak. Found family. Matt and Foggy are in love, but they are oblivious little shits and don't know it yet. Blanket permission. Poisoning. Hurt Matt Murdock. No beta. We die like Matt's dad. Summary. The story inspires Karen to ask, "All right, what's one food you will never, ever eat again?" She thought it would be fun, and it is. It's fun when she shares the story of the time she bit into a raspberry and heard something crunch, spitting out a mangled ladybug, and ever since then, she refuses to eat raspberries or anything raspberry-flavored. It's fun when Foggy tells the story of when he was a teenager and he ate way too much Kugel. It's fun when Foggy tells the story of when he was a teenager and he ate way too much Kugel too quickly after breaking his Yom Kippur fast and threw up in the shul bathroom, and now eating Kugel reminds him of that experience. "Almonds," says Matt. "Because of the time Stick poisoned me." Like he's discussing the weather. Like that's a normal fucking thing to say. It's not fun, then. Nothing has ever been less fun. They are in the office when it happens. Matt and Foggy had had court earlier that day. A simple case of racial profiling and wrongful arrest. Bess Mahoney had sent their client's aunt their way, begging them to help her nephew, who was wrongfully arrested for holding up a bodega. The cops on scene heard, "Suspect is male in gray sweatpants," and ran with it. All the way to cuffing the black teenager who met that part of the description and not much else. The good news was, their client got off scot-free, with a decent settlement from the NYPD for their brutality, which meant Nelson, Murdock, and Page would actually get paid in money, as in legal tender in the United States, rather than tomatoes and hand-knitted scarves. Not that Karen was insulting the scarves. Hers was a mint green, and really was very warm. To make the day even better, their client's aunt had dropped off a bottle of champagne along with the check. Karen had immediately stuck it in the office mini-fridge, that worked most of the time, to chill while Matt and Foggy finished up the last of their paperwork. Finishing a bit before them, Karen ventured out to the nearest store to grab chips and some of Matt's pink wine coolers. "I hate champagne," Matt had slurred on New Year's Eve. "What do you mean you hate champagne?" asked Karen. In her mind, champagne was one of those things that no one had strong feelings about, but would partake in anyway when it was there, like cucumbers or marmalade. "I just hate it," said Matt, waving his arms for emphasis. "It's too fizzy. I hate fizzy things. They taste angry. I don't like drinking angry, Karen." "Drinking alcohol angry sounds like alcoholism," said Foggy, who was much more intoxicated than Matt. The conversation had evolved from there. She got back to the office to find that Foggy had flipped the open sign on the door to closed and pulled the bottle out of the fridge. He and Matt were sitting down on the floor of the office to celebrate by getting extremely drunk in their workplace, like the hard-working professionals they all were. So yes, they are in the office when it happens. Karen sat down with them, gesturing to the chips and coolers like she was unveiling an item for auction. "Behold! This evening's sustenance," she said dramatically. Then, just for the hell of it, she threw the bag of chips hard at Matt's head to see if he would catch them. He did. "Miss Page, you are a saint amongst women, a pinnacle of humanity," said Foggy. He'd fetched some mismatched mugs from behind the coffee machine and was pulling at the gold shit around the mouth of the champagne bottle. Karen frowned at him. "Give me that. You're doing it wrong." She took the bottle and nearly stripped away the gold shit, then stopped at the cork. "Fuck. Any chance we have a corkscrew in this office?" Foggy feigned offense, placing his hand over his heart and throwing his head back in mock disbelief. "Karen! A corkscrew? In our place of work? What kind of hooligans do you think we are? The kind who gets drunk on the floor of their office after hours? Fair enough. Guys, Matt interjected, we don't have a corkscrew, but it's fine. I have a short saber in my desk drawer. Which, okay. Of course he did. Karen very much wanted to know the story behind that. Matt got up and retrieved his saber, which was gently curved with a wooden handle. He held the bottle at arm's length and used the blunt edge to deftly strike the lip of the bottle. The cork flew off with force and landed nearly 15 feet away in the garbage can. Show off, said Foggy. But he was staring intently at Matt's hands as they held the bottle and sword and clearly didn't mean it. Because he was a disaster bisexual, and Matthew Michael Murdoch, Esquire, was hot. That was simply a fact of life. Like the fact that the sky was blue, or politicians were untrustworthy. And they are in the office when it happens. It has been a few hours now, and Foggy and Karen are halfway through the champagne. They aren't drunk, just kind of tipsy. Matt's drunk a single cooler and is tipsy because he's a lightweight, which Karen is kind of jealous of because it means he gets drunk really cheaply. He's also been strong-armed into eating some chips, which he normally doesn't do, but Foggy is on a quest to get Matt to eat more. Karen has taken off her heels, and Matt is complaining loudly about the smell of her feet, but it's clear it's more of a joke than an actual complaint. Foggy is telling some story from their law school days when Matt threw out all his egg salad because the smell was awful, and Matt's lost his glasses, and he's lying down with his legs crossed like a pencil, with his head in Foggy's lap, and it's sickeningly sweet and very gay. They're holding hands. Karen can't wait for these two oblivious idiots to get their shit together. And the story inspires Karen to ask, "All right, what's one food you will never, ever eat again?" She thought it would be fun. And it is. It's fun when she shares the story of the time she bit into a raspberry and heard something crunch, spitting out a mangled ladybug. And ever since then, she refuses to eat raspberries or anything raspberry-flavored. It's fun when Foggy tells the story of when he was a teenager and he ate way too much Kugel too quickly after breaking his Yom Kippur fast and threw up in the shul bathroom. And now eating Kugel reminds him of that experience. "Almonds," says Matt. "Because of the time Stick poisoned me." Like he's discussing the weather. Like that's a normal fucking thing to say. It's not fun, then. Nothing has ever been less fun. Foggy chokes on his drink. He coughs for a good 20 seconds, trying to get his breath back. Or so Karen thinks. The world has gone kind of quiet in the worst way. "He did what?" says Foggy, brushing away Matt's noises of concern. Matt looks very concerned, all of a sudden, about Foggy's ability to breathe, and not about the grenade he just pulled the pin from, tossed and walked away as it exploded behind him. "Who's Stick?" asks Karen. She's not really sure she wants to know. "He was my teacher," says Matt, at the exact same time Foggy says, "Matt's Mr. Miyagi, although I'm now rethinking that description, because what the fuck, Matt?" "He was the one who taught me to compartmentalize and trained me to use my senses," explained Matt, furrowing his brows. "He taught me to fight, to be ready for the war. That's how I can be daredevil." Foggy has now gone very still. "The war?" he says slowly, like he's trying not to spook a wounded animal. "Yes," says Matt, sounding kind of confused. "That's why he was training me, so I could fight in it. But he wanted a soldier. And I wanted a father. We wanted different things, so he left." "He wanted a soldier," repeats Foggy. "Yeah, but I wasn't good enough." Matt frowns. "Foggy, Karen, your hearts are going really fast. What's wrong? I've told you about Stick before, Foggy." Karen's heartbeat is indeed giving her away. She feels winded, starved for air, like she's been punched really hard in the solar plexus. Foggy looks about the same. "You did, but Matt, I thought Stick was a karate instructor. I don't think you ever really explained who he was." Matt sits up, because he's smart. He knows he's said something wrong, but he's not sure what it is, which is honestly even more heartbreaking. Matt explains about Stick, and the mind controls the body, and about Stick's war, and getting his fingers broken until he perfected a particular grip. He tells them about turning his 11-year-old body into a weapon, about wandering hands, and soldiers need to be prepared for all forms of violence, Maddie, and seeing how long he could go without eating. He informs them about how cyanide smells like almonds, and how that's why he didn't notice when Stick put it into the almond tart he gave Matt for his birthday as a test. And Matt spent 4 days in the hospital wing of the orphanage, and the nuns had no idea what was causing it, because why would an 11-year-old have ingested a near-lethal dose of cyanide? That's ridiculous, and... So? That's why I don't like almonds anymore, Matt finishes. Like he hasn't just told them a horror story starring himself as a child. Dear God, Karen can picture baby Matt starved for affection, accepting that poisoned almond tart from someone whom he believes could be a father figure. She used to read crime novels. She knows what cyanide poisoning does to a person, and the part of her that reared its ugly head when she killed Wesley wants to find this Stick monster and kill him. Foggy is crying. Matt is padding around on the floor for his glasses, and sliding them on the way he does when he feels vulnerable. I'm sorry, he says quietly, because he always thinks he's a burden to them when he shares anything about himself, which they used to joke was the Catholicism, but which actually may also be the cult and the abuse and the child-soldier thing, holy fuck. You don't need to be sorry, says Karen. Matt looks unconvinced, because of course he does. No, Matthew Murdoch, listen to me. Listen to my heart. She waits for him to indicate that he's listening. You don't need to be sorry. We are a family. You and me and that blonde disaster of a law partner. A family. Her heartbeat clearly says truth, because Matt looks like he's trying to compute an impossible fact. She's right, Foggy says then. You and me and Karen. We want all of it, Matt. All of you. The good, the bad, the dressing up like a dickhead with a leather fetish and going to fight crime. The traumatic backstory of it all. We are here for all of it. Foggy has taken Matt's hand and carefully choreographing his movements, giving Matt plenty of opportunity to stop him, removes Matt's glasses again and sets them down on the desk. So gently, Foggy takes Matt's chin and brings his face level with Foggy's own. No barriers. We're here. Karen crowds in to lean her head against Matt's shoulder. They have all neglected the concept of personal space. The office is quiet except for their breathing. You aren't lying. But I don't believe you, Matt confesses. And ouch, that hurts. That really, really hurts. And says quite a lot about the scale of Matt's abandonment issues. Karen wants to say more. Matt deserves more. Foggy clearly has more he would like to say, if they give him 5 to 7 business days to wrap his head around the bombshell Matt dropped tonight. The conversation clearly isn't finished. But it's late, and Matt looks exhausted, like he just ran a marathon, and they should probably go home to sleep, because they're in the office and something big just happened. One day, you will, she says, and makes a mental note to check her apartment for almonds. Rather than tomatoes and hand-knitted scarves. Baby, come here.